Fred Film Radio, Berlin International Film Festival, Germany.
This is Sarah Bradbury for Fred Film Radio, reporting from the 69th Berlin Film Festival. Today I'm joined by Polish director Agnieszka Holland to discuss her competition film, Mr. Jones. Agnieszka, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us, and congratulations on a really compelling, moving and eye-opening film. Maybe if you could just start by telling us what inspired you to make a film about this particular topic. Were you already familiar with the story of Gareth Jones?
I didn't know Gareth Jones' story. I knew about the famine, about Holodomor, because it's an important fact of the history, and I was interested in the history of Soviet Union and 20th century's atrocities. My knowledge was pretty, superficial. A posteriori, I realized that I read about him in Timothy Snyder's book, Bloodlands, but there was so many information there that I didn't remember his name and his story. But the story of the stories of alarmists, of the journalists who discovered the truth, and tried to give the voice to the, to this truth, and are actually silenced. And it's not a unique story. You have a lot of stories like that. It means it is the price the courageous journalist is paying for. I think it is important. Important story, and in the moment when I read the script, I felt that I see the form for the story, which I will be able to express. I'm interested in Ukraine. I'm interested in Russia. I'm interested in Soviet Russia. I'm interested in the totalitarian crimes of 20th century and what it means for today. And I'm interested also in the tension between the truth and the fake news and the lie and the propaganda. So all those subjects which are in the film are for me very, very important, very personal somehow. And the fact that practically it was not a representation of Great Famine, of Holodomor, when I seen the chance to do something about it, I thought that it's some kind of the duty also.
Did you stay truthful to the script written by Andrea Chalupa, or was it a process of editing and changing it as you went?
Well, I never, except of the TV series when you have to do what is written because it's corporational duty. But when I'm doing my film, I'm always changing them somehow. But the principal structure and the principal things, I was faithful to. We've been playing with that, and also I was looking for the way how to express the things cinematically, which of course it is different from the script, because the script is only some kind of the blueprint to me.
You used the term Holodomor, but in fact, is it not right that some historians have disputed this was in fact a coordinated attack on the people by the state?
Well, it's a lot of things when the historians are not agree about, especially the historians connected to different kind of the political or ideological agendas. And of course, the documents when Stalin gives the order to do it exactly like that, doesn't it? So you have the things open to interpretations, but serious historians from the Western world, like from United States or Canada or UK, and the historians on the Ukrainian sides or on Polish sides, are pretty clear that it was a real deliberation, that it wasn't just a disaster which happened. How much it was planned in advance, we don't know, but it means we don't know. We can imagine, because the army, the KGB, the party members have been acting in very precise and very deliberate way in Ukraine, depriving the peasants from the grain and from any food practically, building the towers on the fields and shooting the peasant who try to grab something from the fields, taking away all kind of the food supplies from the people, depriving the people of the possibility to move to another place to look for the food, practically arresting them in this area, and sending also some part of the peasants, richer peasants, but not only, to Siberia, to another another thing. So, and the grain was taken and was sold, so all the activity was, and it wasn't 1 year, it was 3 years, which the politics of the party, Communist Party, was like that, and they knew very well that the people are dying massively.
You explore the influence of Gareth Jones on George Orwell, particularly in his writing of Animal Farm. Was there any evidence to show that they actually met?
No. It's some kind of the, you know, assumption that they probably met. And certainly Animal Farm was inspired by those events. They've been same age, less or more, living in the same London circle. They had same literary agent. They had like similar kind of the interest, so it was like very possible that they met in person.
Are you surprised now that you know the story of Gareth Jones that more films haven't been made about his story and his role in uncovering this genocide of some sort?
Well, you have plenty of stories which wasn't made into film, and plenty, especially from communist side. You have plenty of the crimes of 20th century which never would have been shown. And till some point, also, the Holocaust wasn't shown too much, you know, for the first 20, 30 years. It was very, you know, rare and very, like, limited pieces which were made into the audiovisual storytelling. And, you know, it is, I think it's very complicated reasons why communist crimes were not widely published. I think that it was always very strong intellectual and political public opinion in the West which didn't want to attack Soviet Union and the communist ideology, because they thought that it is some kind of the counterbalance against the wildness of the capitalism and the corruption of capitalist corporations, and that it is some kind of the project, egalitarian project, which in the end can like make planet better. And some of them, they've been like Durante, useful idiots. It means they've been somehow corrupted, not only ideologically but also on monetary side. And it was very, very difficult for after the Second War until practically 70s. It was very difficult to publish the documents and books and memoirs about gulags or about, you know, about communist crimes. It was practically impossible. But if they've been published, they've been immediately attacked by the pretty powerful opinion players.
Do you still think it's difficult to make a film that explores the impact of communism, particularly in Russia?
Yes. For example, when you are speaking to French intellectuals till now, and you say that it's some that you can wait it, you know, the communist Stalinian totalitarianism and Nazi totalitarianism, they don't accept it. It's like the travesty to say, you know, that Hitler and Stalin, somehow it is, you know, the two sides of the similar crimes against humanity.
What can you tell us about where you actually shot the film?
In Ukraine, 200 kilometers from Kiev. We found like villages which were practically unchanged from the time when the action happens, and very, very sparely populated. It was mostly old women living there who we talked to and who remember Holodomor. And what was very, you know, they've been children, you know, it means the women now in 80s or something, they, you know, they've been little kids. It is somehow for generations of Ukrainians, and not only Ukrainians, but Ukraine was the biggest victim of this famine. It was like the hidden secret, you know, because they didn't speak about it. They didn't speak about it even in the families, where, because it was some kind of the shame and fear which was connected to that. And I think that political history of Ukraine afterward was somehow determined by this trauma. It's not up to me to analyze how the trauma of this kind is influencing the capacity to build, you know, healthy state. But they are poor because, you know, because it's more of the consequences of the communists altogether, you know. In you have many areas also in Russia, in post-communist Soviet Union, which are poor. Belarus is not very rich neither. And Ukraine is practically in war for the last 5-6 years, so certainly it doesn't help.
What can you tell us about the casting process? You've got some really incredible up-and-coming actors and actresses, particularly James Norton and Vanessa Kirby.
Well, first we have to find the actors who are willing to go on this kind of adventure. It's not like normal commercial movie, which, you know, which is easy to make and which they are on the, you know, safe ground and which is like financially very interesting for the, you know, for the stars. So it was several young actors who wanted to take part in that, and I did the casting as normally you do the casting, mostly watching their work and after meeting and talking and, you know, and discussing. And James, like me, mix of the, you know, of the strength and the, you know, and the politeness, this kind of the very British quality, which I thought would be great to have for Gradual. They're very talented and courageous actors. So, you know, television today is giving to the actors much better possibilities, opportunities than the movies in general. When you are watching the movies made in last few years, it is not so many like great roles for young actors, and they find it on the television.
It seems now that TV is also forming a really important part of your career.
Yeah, you know, in some point when the independent cinema started to shrink in US especially, and television started to flourish, and the most innovative storytelling and the most innovative stories and also open to cast the new actors, which was very difficult in the cinema, especially not only Hollywood cinema but also in the independent cinema. So suddenly it was the ground where something which I'm calling the cinema of the middle, it means the cinema which in an accessible way tells important stories and personal stories but make somehow attractive to wider audience, this cinema practically started to vanish. And of course, you have always few films made for the Oscars, the Oscar campaign, or for Sundance, you know. But in generally, it is very small part of the cinema, and it is not the very powerful wave right now. And it moved to television somehow in a natural way. Now I think that with the crisis on television, that suddenly they are the victim of their success. It means it's too many of this, and it suddenly is losing this originality, and it becomes much more conventional somehow. But still, for actors, young actors, but also aging actors and actresses, that is a great chance to create something important. And a lot of film directors are doing both. They are doing both, and now with VOD platforms, we are also producing movies like Netflix or Amazon. You know, the two best movies of last year to me is Cold War and Roma, and they are produced by the VOD platform. So everything is, you know, the market is changing, and the actors and directors have to respond to that. But of course, making movie is, for the director, is more exciting because the level of the personal freedom and creative freedom is bigger. The television somehow is serving like wider project, and what I'm doing is only the part of this project.
Do you think that also in that way it's opened up more diversity in filmmaking, particularly thinking about female directors? Do you think the industry has changed and there's more opportunities now?
Well, you know, it tells that it changes. We'll see, you know, for the result. In Hollywood, I don't think that it was much more a female director in last year or two, even if it was the talk started. 2 years ago, it was like 7%. Maybe now it's 8. But, you know, it's coming, I think, that the great thing it was that some women directors did the big action movie. For example, this movie was successful. It changes, you know, it changes the approach. And also what is interesting, what I think will mean the revolution somehow, that they tested the interest of the audience for female characters, and it appeared that female characters, powerful, important female characters, main female characters in the movie attracts more of the audience than male characters. It means it is change in the audience, which afterwards will in consequences have the changes in the production, because it means that women decide now what they want to see. And before, the studios didn't want to finance female-driven movies, because they say that anyway, you know, the men go to the cinema and they want to see, like, you know, him, superheroes and the stuff like that. And the girlfriend is always coming with him anyway. So now it is not anyway. So I think it will mean the change. I think that the emancipation of women, especially in States, you can see the change. In Europe, it's graduated. It's going like that.
Do you still see that we have a problem with corruption in our media?
Yeah, I think so. I think that big part of the media and mainstream media are somehow corrupted. And not always corrupted in the way that they are like paid by, you know, politicians, but they support some political projects. And in order to support this project, they are able to pay with the truth. that they somehow... And after you have another, you know, thing, it means you have the media and a lot of internet and social medias, which are directly manipulated by politicians using different, you know, devices, institutes, algorithms, bots, trolls and whatever. And this manipulation became, I think, became the big problem of political life in our days. And some countries are doing it more and some countries are doing it less. Maybe they are stupid that they are doing it less, but somehow it's very, very difficult for the regular audience to distinguish between the lie, fake news, and some kind of the hidden propaganda or open propaganda and the facts. So it's why I think the honest journalism and the fact-checking journalism and investigating journalists are extremely important. Still, even more than ever. I think that it is one of the biggest dangers of the modernity, that we don't know what is the truth anymore and anything can become truth.
How did you go about shaping the role of Mr. Jones? Could you say that in some respects he's almost like a Dostoevsky character?
I don't think that he's character like from Dostoevsky. I think that he's more the character like from Joseph Conrad novels. It means somebody who has inside of, who is, you know, nice, middleman, ambitious, very bright man, interested in the world, in the politics, in the reality. Very well prepared, equipped to understand, you know, understand what's going on, because he had a good education and he spoke, which wasn't so obvious for British young men in this time and even today. Several languages. He had this, you know, this nose to see underneath of the political processes. We can see it from his articles. And he didn't want to go there and, you know, to take enormous risk. He was just curious and he thought that when he is investigating something, he has to figure out really what's going on and then to tell the truth. So somehow he's a very decent man. And what was difficult also for James when we've been talking, how to, you know, present this decent man who doesn't have the, like, some craziness or something extreme or something radical or something who is like well-made British citizen, you know, with all the politeness and everything, and give him just a little hint of something a little eccentric, just a little here, a little funny, you know, and a little childish. So it was done with quite subtle means, and it's why I really admire James, that he infused the life into this character without having a lot of elements, you know, of tools. And he's growing, but also, you know, we wanted to show some kind of the deep depression he finds himself after what he's seen, which was certainly the trauma to him, and after when this truth was rejected and he was discredited and he understands that it was for nothing, that anything will change, that no one wants to hear about it. And what was for me like the main subject, it was, and what I think is relevant is what I am afraid about today, it is this triad of this corruption of media and the real cowardice of the politicians, that they don't need the truth, they need, you know, to the reality which could be easily manipulated. And the indifference of the, you know, public opinion and indifference of the society. And this triad met in late 30s and it led to the disaster which we know as the Second World War. And this triad I kind of see today. And to manipulate and to silence, it's a lot of money which Western society which is paying this kind of lie. The populists are paid by big money.
Do you expect or hope that your film might be released in Russia?
I don't know exactly the distribution market in Russia, because it's pretty capricious, you know. Some Russian films are so subversive that I would say, how it's possible that in the state which is authoritarian and the censorship exists somehow and the media are not completely free, how it's possible that the movies like that are made and after they are distributed? So I think that the image is not black and white, and probably you have the holes in the system that you can suddenly show something, but I'm not sure for this movie. I cannot tell you.
Well, thank you so much for sharing all that with us. Congratulations once again on a really wonderful film and best of luck with it here at the Berlin Film Festival. From the 69th Berlin Film Festival, I've been Sarah Bradbury for Fred Film Radio, the festival insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.